welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Livonier, bringing you an hour of adventure. Later on, it's The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen from 1948. But first, The Adventures of Frank Race, a syndicated episode from October 2nd, 1949, called The Adventure of the Green Doubloon.
The Adventures of Frank Race, starring Paul Dubov. The war changed many things, the face of the earth and the people on it. Before the war, Frank Race worked as an attorney, but he traded his law books for the cloak and dagger of the OSS. And when it was over, his former life was over too. Adventure had become his business. The Adventures of Frank Race. Now we join Frank Race for the adventure of the Green Doubloon.
Central America and rain. They go together like bread and jam, only the combination is not nearly so pleasant. Our plane was a few minutes from the landing field at Calan, gate to the eastern entrance of the Panama Canal. And Mark Donovan was doing a little bouncing of his own, independent of the atmospheric conditions.
Oh, brother, next time I come down this part of the world, I'm taking a nice, slow cattle boat. Even if I have to share a room with a wild bull.
It is a little bumpy, Mark.
A little bumpy, the man says. I would like to see Gene Autry stay in his seat if it wasn't but a safety belt.
We're losing altitude. You'll be on the ground in a few minutes.
Yeah. I hope the weather is nicer down there than it is up here. Look, what do we have to come to this place for, anyhow?
To see if we can persuade an embezzler to part with $300,000 in exchange for his freedom.
300 G's?
Yes.
So why didn't they just get in touch with the cops down here and have them latch on to the guy?
The company figures he might give up the money if I can convince him of the error of his ways and promise that no charges will be pressed.
Yeah. Look, who is the guy? What makes him so sure he's down here?
His name is David Bellamy, and he's a passenger on the SS Kermit bound for Peru. According to the timetable, the Kermit figures to be in port at Calan, waiting to go through the locks to the Pacific.
You know anything about this Bellamy cat?
Yes. Used to be a radio actor and a master of dialects. Then he got in trouble and spent some time in prison. While he was there, he learned accounting.
Brother, he must have learned plenty to be able to juggle 300 grand. Hey, look. If he learned accounting while he was locked up, what did they lock him up for in the first place?
He served 8 years for manslaughter, Mark. He killed a man with his bare hands. If you're a kid addicted to the making of mud pies, then Calan in the rain will appeal to you. But if you're an adult addicted to the simple comforts of life, there are better places. However, the weather wasn't the only unpleasant feature about Calan. There was an additional unpleasant touch, supplied by the Office of the Port Authority.
I'm sorry, Mr. Race, but your friend Mr. Bellamy isn't aboard the Kermit. He was when she made port this morning, but he seems to have disappeared.
I see. Thanks.
Of course, the ship has just started through the locks. He may catch up along the way. Passengers do miss connections sometimes. It's not unusual.
Yeah. Maybe he went on a bender in town and he'll turn up later. We can go on a ship and wait for him.
No, he won't be turning up later. Come on, Mark.
Grace, look. How do you know the guy won't be going back to the clinic?
Because the passage he booked to Peru is too obvious. It's a throw-off. He came this far, but now he'll try to make a connection to go someplace else. And this time, he won't leave a trail.
Yeah, but you're not sure, eh?
No, I'm not. But I can make sure. You go aboard the Kermit. See if he shows up in the next couple of hours. If he doesn't, meet me back here at the port office.
Okay. But where are you going?
I'm going to see if I can find out how a man would go about disappearing in Panama. I knew that Bellamy wasn't going to be easy to find. Away from the ship, he was going to have another name. And since he was an expert in dialects, there was every chance he'd adopt a different nationality. I thought about it as I made my way through the narrow streets, deserted in the rainy night. I seemed to be the only man without shelter in Colin, but I wasn't.
Do you have a match, senor?
Huh? Oh, I didn't see you. Yes, I have a match. But I doubt if you can get a light in the rain.
I like the rain, senor. I always get what I want in the rain.
people are so nice. They never refuse Diego.
That isn't a cigarette in your hand.
No, senor, no. That's a gun. Step into the doorway.
How can I refuse?
Now, if the senor has any valuable he wishes to contribute to Diego's welfare fund, Diego will be most grateful.
I only have a little cash, but this wristwatch is worth a sizable sum.
Yes, that's going to be fine.
He bent his head slightly to look at the watch, and his gun hand dipped automatically. We were in tight quarters in the doorway. I brought my hands up to undo the watch strap, step quickly to the side, and let Diego have a left in the solar plexus. Now, drop it!
Si, senor. If you insist.
That's better. I'll confiscate this weapon for the present.
This senor talk like a gentleman. Such a gentleman wouldn't waste his time taking Diego to the police. Besides, Diego would be an excellent guy.
Guy?
Si.
Come off it, Diego. You're not a native. You're a Mexican. I can tell by your accent.
This senor is clever. They didn't like Diego in Mexico, so Diego ran away.
And you got this far before you ran out of breath. All right.
The police might send Diego back to Mexico, and I can't stand that place on account of my health.
Fugitives who get into a place are usually smart enough to have their eye on an exit. Turning Diego over to the Panama authorities might take him off the streets, but it wouldn't bring me closer to Bellamy. I had a hunch, and I played it.
Senor, I would do anything to avoid the police.
I'm not turning you in. I can't afford it.
This senor has a dislike for men in uniforms.
Let's say the police would rather find me than you. I've got to get out of here, Diego, and I've got to do it without a passport. Maybe you know a way.
From Colón? Oh, no, senor. Too many American officers.
There must be someplace.
Si. 30 miles to the east, senor, is Puerto Bello. It was once the hiding place of pirates. In Puerto Bello is a cafe called the Green Doubloon.
The Green Doubloon?
Si. And the proprietor is Senor Kamamoto, a Japanese. He is very good at making people disappear, senor.
I picked Mark up at our rendezvous, and we headed for Puerto Bello, Caribbean hangout of the old-time pirates. It was a port of intrigue, an international black hole, a Western Hemisphere counterpart of Shanghai or Calcutta or Suez. And at the bottom of the hole, with no other spot claiming competition, was the Green Doubloon.
Oh, brother. You ever want anybody's throat slit for half a buck? This is the place.
Some boots back there by the wall. Let's take one of them.
Ain't you going to ask for this Kamamoto cag?
You can die quickly asking questions in a place like this. Or sit down and let somebody else do the asking.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
If you order anything, Mark, better make it American beer. I wouldn't vouch for the beverages in a place like this.
You don't have to vouch for the beverages, but personally, brother, I would vouch for the doll which is walking toward us here or any place else.
Welcome to the Green Doubloon, gentlemen.
She was Eurasian. An oriental half-caste. And when they're beautiful, they make other women take a tight grasp on the arms of their husbands. This one was beautiful. Beautiful enough to make a movie star self-conscious about her faults.
I am Mono Kamamoto. My father is the proprietor. I see my voice surprises you.
I expected more of an accent.
My mother was an Englishwoman.
Your mother and your father are to be congratulated.
That is a very nice thing for you to say. But now, I will say something to you that will not sound nice. But if you are intelligent, you will be grateful.
All right, baby, what is it?
Leave the Green Doubloon. Do not look back, and do not come back.
We want to leave more than the Green Doubloon. We want to leave Panama, quickly and quietly.
Yeah, fast and with no noise, see?
Then you have come in search of escape and not in pursuit of another?
Yes. And I'm ready and willing to pay for my passage.
Who sent you here?
A man named Diego. We had to leave Mexico rather abruptly.
Right. Guy at the bar looking at us. And he ain't friendly.
I've been watching him.
He's coming his way.
I had better leave
you.
No,
stay.
Mona, come back to the bar.
She's having a drink with us.
I'd better go. He will make trouble.
I grabbed her arm and held her in the chair. The man who'd been standing at the bar moved closer. He was a Norwegian seaman. He was wearing a mate's cap. His soiled white shirt was unbuttoned, revealing a powerful, hair-matted chest. He came over and placed his hands palm down on the table.
Did you hear me, Mona?
Please, Gunnar.
I've told you before.
I caught the movement of his hands as they came away from the table. The back of his hand caught Mona across the face, and I threw the table over and won!
Get him, Race! Get him! Look out behind you!
Gunnar had friends, a couple of other Norwegian sailors, and they moved into the fight.
Ah, come on, drop that chair, pal.
Come on, Gunnar, try again.
I'll kill you!
Come on, Mona, the light.
All right.
Come on. Come on, Race, the back door.
I streaked through the door, but somebody intercepted me. I heard the swish of a chair coming through the air and tried to duck. I didn't make it. The sound of the green doubloon faded out, and so did the rain. Everything faded away into black silence. I came to in a storeroom, lighted by a feeble candle. Mark was trussed up in a corner, still unconscious. Two men were seated on a couple of small barrels. One of them was a Japanese.
You did considerable damage to my place of business, Mr. Race.
How did you know my name?
From your American driver's license. This is Mr. Harrow.
Oh. Hello.
Hello, Race.
Harrow was wearing a white suit and a Panama hat, and neither of them had been improved by the climate. On the small finger of his left hand, however, was a blue-white diamond which demanded recognition in any climate.
I see you're admiring my ring, Race. It was a gift from a passenger.
A passenger?
My daughter tells me you are anxious to leave Panama. Mr. Harrow has accommodations for people who find our company boring.
I haven't exactly been bored, Mr. Kamamoto. But if Harrow can get us out of here, I'm ready to leave.
My yacht, the Chaucer, is in the harbor. We'll sail at 4 a.m. I don't imagine you have a passport.
If I had a passport, I'd be sailing from Calan. Where's your next port of call?
It's sort of unscheduled, Mr. Race. You'll be dropped off someplace in South America. Venezuela, perhaps, or the Guianas.
Will there be other passengers?
One other, in addition to you and your friend.
Speaking of me and my friend, would you mind untying us?
Oh, I'm afraid that isn't quite possible. You see, I'm a stickler for procedure, Mr. Race.
And tying up the passengers is part of the procedure?
Yes. You'll be blindfolded, taken aboard the yacht just before we sail. It'll be a rather uncomfortable journey, but then one must suffer some to attain one's goal.
You mean we'll be tied up all the way?
Until we can put you ashore, Mr. Race.
I can see the point here where somebody might give you away. But why aboard the ship?
Fugitives from the law, risky cargo, Mr. Race. The South American nations are rather thorough about their coastal patrol vessels.
I have as much at stake there as you have. I wouldn't want to be caught.
Good. Because if you are tied up, we can make sure you won't be caught.
What do you mean, Harrow?
You and your friend are hot cargo, Mr. Race. The only way to carry hot cargo is to be sure you can get rid of it in a pinch. If we're spotted, Mr. Race, you'll be weighted down and thrown over the side.
Sea voyage with weights around your ankles is no vacation at all, especially when you can't change your mind and go to the mountains instead. Even if David Bellamy and his embezzled $300,000 were on board, chances of getting the money were slim, and chances of leaving the vessel alive seemed even slimmer. It was something to think about in the darkened hold as the yacht Chaucer pitched and rolled her way into the open sea.
Oh, brother.
That you, Mark?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's me, I think. Hey, what's going on? An earthquake or something?
We're on board a yacht. A kind gentleman is smuggling us into South America.
Oh, Father Wright and I would sign away my social security to be smuggled into the Brooklyn Navy Yacht. Hey, wait a minute. Something's wrong with me, Race. I can't move.
You're tied up.
So come and untie me.
I happen to be in the same boat, Marcus, if you'll pardon the pun. Roll around and see if you can work the ropes against something with an edge.
Ah, no good, Race. Tied to some kind of pipe, I don't... What was that?
What's the matter?
Something bounced off my head. It was alive.
A rat, probably. The hole is full of them.
Oh, brother. For this, I give up driving a nice, comfortable cab with not even a mouse in it. Hey. A light up there.
Somebody coming down.
Keep
Race.
Mona, what are you doing aboard?
I often sail on the Chaucer. My father owned it before Mr. Harrow. I've come to help you.
You can start by cutting these ropes. Do you have a knife?
No, but I can go and get one.
Too risky. There's a very small penknife on the keychain in my pocket.
Oh, yes. Yes, I have it. Be still now.
Is there another passenger on the ship?
Yes, in the captain's cabin.
Traveling first class.
Think it's Bellamy, Rach?
Better be Bellamy. How many in the crew, Mona?
4, including Gunner.
Good. I want to see that boy again.
Oh, Race, be careful. He wants to kill you. And this time he has a gun. All of the crew are armed. There. Now your hands are free.
Now you get to work on Mark. I'll untie the leg ropes.
All right.
I'm going up on deck, Mark. If I can, I'll make the captain's cabin.
All right. What do you want I should do when I get loose?
See if you can separate one of the crew from a gun and meet me there. Slicker hanging at the top of the companionway, and I slipped it on for cover. The crew on deck was too busy to be counting noses in the storm. I hugged the rail until I got to the captain's cabin, then I caught the door handle and crashed in.
Hello, senor.
Diego.
Senor is surprised that Diego has enough money for an ocean voyage. You see, after you left me, I ran into another man with no wristwatch and much money. He was loaded. Now Diego is loaded.
You're liable to be loaded with lead before this trip is over, Diego. They have no intention of landing us safely. We'll be jettisoned at the first sign of a coast patrol boat.
Only you and your friends, senor. Not Diego.
How come?
For the same reason Diego was not tied up in the hold. I seek only to escape, senor. But you have come to find somebody, no?
I have come to find somebody, yes. How did you know?
I hear them talking. You are looking for David Bellamy, eh?
Then he is on board?
She, he is on board.
Careful, those things are falling.
What is
the... We've hit a reef.
We've got the snakes, senor.
Diego, get out of here.
Don't go for that gun, Harold. You're going to need all the help you can get.
All right, Race, I'll make a deal with you. Take the pup in the forward bulkhead. Diego, you go aft. I'll send your friend to help you, Race.
All right, and you better hit the radio and put out an SOS.
That isn't going to be easy. The door to the radio shack is smashed. I'll have to project plenty to be heard over the sound effects.
Mr. Harrow, the pumps.
Hey, never mind him. We'll be lucky if any of us get out of this alive.
Oh, brother. My head's a blistered in this pump race.
It won't be for much longer. Look up ahead.
Hey, that's land, ain't it?
It's a small island. There's a patch of clear sky. He's heading her into the lagoon.
Oh, brother, safe at last.
That's the misstatement of the year. Once we hit the calm in that lagoon, that's when the trouble starts.
I mean, that's when they're going to start blasting.
We'll have outlived our usefulness.
All right. It's a pretty narrow opening into that lagoon.
Yes, and we're coming into it fast. The tide flow is picking us up now. That narrow entrance may save our lives.
Well, how do you figure that?
Foliage comes right down to the water and overhangs. We abandon ship as soon as we hit the entrance.
You mean we dive for?
I'm afraid so, Marcus. It's dive or die. We'll have a better chance if we can get our feet on land.
Oh, brother, we're really riding this tide now.
Mm-hmm.
This tub feels like a surfboard.
All right, boy, here it comes. Stay underwater as much as you can. The current will be rough. Good luck.
Good luck, Race.
All right, dive!
Let's go!
Race, stop!
Oh.
Come out of it, Mark. Come out of it. You're all right.
Oh, what I did to geography books. Thought I have swallowed the whole ocean, and I'll have to be changed. Speaking of geography, where are we?
Not too far from where we started. Small island off the Panama coast.
Our pals get the ship in, all right?
Yes. She's beached to the lagoon. Move that brush a little, and you can see her.
Yeah. Yeah, keeled over. That baby ain't going to sail anymore. Where is everybody?
I'm afraid they're beating the brush looking for us. They spotted us when I dragged you ashore.
And this island ain't very big, Race. One of them's liable to yell bingo any minute.
Duck!
What's the matter?
It's Kamamoto. In the tree on the other side of the lagoon. I didn't even know he was on board.
Did he see us?
No. We better stay low until he comes down.
See anything, Kamamoto?
Nothing. I'm here.
How about you, Gunner?
All clear on this side, right down to the beach.
They must be on the other side of the lagoon. Find your men now. Beat every inch of that ground.
All right, Mark. They'll be coming, and there's no way we can avoid them. We better get busy while we can. Yeah. Or they're coming around.
What are we going to do?
Ever hear of a Malay man trap?
No. What is it, a dame and a sarang?
Just as effective. We got to get back into those saplings and pull down some of the vines. We take two of the saplings strong enough to require your weight and mine to bend them. Then we stake them to the ground and make a noose from the vines.
You kidding? Look, guns or no guns, I'd rather fight them guys and hang myself.
If this works, we'll have at least one gun to fight with. You stay undercover. When we get the trap rigged, I'll stake myself out as bait on the other side. Now, as soon as one of them steps into the noose on the ground, release the vine holding the sapling, we'll have ourselves a gun and one man less to contend with.
Oh, I get it. The trees go up and the guy goes up with them, huh?
Like a piece of dust in a Hoover vacuum cleaner. Come on, we haven't got much time. That does it, Mark. You know when to release the vines?
Sure. As soon as somebody steps into the noose on the ground.
Right. We finish just in time. Get hidden.
You see who it is?
It's one of the seamen. I'm going on ahead and draw him after me.
Right. Come on, Davy. I'm dying to see if this thing works. Well, come on, stupid. You're looking the wrong way. That's right, Davy. Step right into my parlor. Just a few feet more.
That's the jackpot.
Hold on, Mark.
Huh? It worked, didn't it? Look at him up there. He's not cold.
We can cut him down later. Pick up that gun.
Oh, with pleasure. Now we can dig in someplace and haul out.
No. Now we can reverse tactics. I'm tired of being hunted. I came after Bellamy, and I'm going to get him.
Hmm. But which one of them is Bellamy?
I'm not sure. Kamamoto, maybe. Or even Diego. Or Harrow.
Kamamoto is Japanese, and Diego is a Mexican.
And Bellamy is an expert dialectician. Remember, he did all right as a radio actor.
Hey, that's right. That's right. And don't forget that gun I carry. Bellamy once killed a guy with his bare hands, didn't he? Well, that gun has got the biggest hands I ever saw.
If Harold got that SOS through and we were piling up on that reef, it may not be long before a patrol boat gets here. I want to have Bellamy wrapped up by then.
All right. Hey, here comes a new customer.
He sees us.
Match up for another one, Race.
Nice shooting, boy.
Nice shooting, Warren. Don't turn around.
How do you like that? Caught flat-footed.
Throw the gun behind you. Throw it.
Better do it, Mark.
I got them, Harrow. I'm going to let them have it right now.
No, you're not, Gunner. Drop your weapon, too.
Don't you tell me. I've got him. I'll kill you, too.
Well, I guess that's the end of the killing race.
Not while you're still holding that gun.
Oh, very well, then. I'll throw it away. I couldn't stand by and see murder done, even if he was going to make it profitable.
Are you sure it was the prospect of murder that changed your mind?
What do you mean, Race?
I mean the United States Coast Guard cutter that's heading into the lagoon.
What? Well, what do you know it is?
Yes.
Oh, brother, look at that beautiful flag.
Why, I didn't even see it.
Excuse me, Rice. I'm going down and throw flowers at those guys.
Harrow, what made you kill Gunner?
I told you. I didn't want to see him shoot you down in cold blood.
You said he was going to make it profitable. What did you mean by that?
As you may have guessed, his real name is Bellamy. He's the man you were after.
What's your real name, Harrow?
I don't understand.
You had Mona steer me to Diego. First, you wanted me to think that he was Bellamy. But you stopped Gunner from shooting me when you saw that cutter coming into the lagoon. Now that he's dead, you want me to think that he's Bellamy.
But he is, I tell you. He was.
You ever been a radio actor, Harrow?
I've never even listened to the thing.
No? Then why did you refer to the storm as sound effect? And why did you say you'd have to project to be heard when you send an SOS?
Smart, aren't you, Ray?
Smart enough to know radio language when I hear it, Bellamy. I want to make a deal with you on that money you embezzled. Tell me where it is, and there'll be no charges pressed.
Can I count on that?
Absolutely.
Money's in the American Exchange Bank in Brazil under the name of Edward Harrow.
Good. Now you won't have any prison term to serve. After you're executed.
Executed?
You're not forgetting you just murdered Gunner, are you?
Why, you know. You're not as good as you used to be with bare hands, Bellamy.
Hey, Ray, what's going on here? What's going on?
Mr. Bellamy just signed off after a mediocre farewell performance.
Bellamy? That's Bellamy?
Yes, it is. Well, Marcus, what are you looking so unhappy about?
Oh, no. Oh, look. Look at them clouds up there. Holy cow, Race, I'd rather be dead. It's gonna rain again.
The Adventures of Frank Race, starring Paul Dubov, with Tony Barrett as Mark Donovan, comes to you from Hollywood.
The Adventures of Frank Race, on Tuned to Yesterday from October 2nd, 1949. The man behind the organ for the soundtrack of that episode, Ivan Ditmars, was also featured in that same year on many different CBS programs, including the adventure anthology series Escape and Philip Marlowe. Also, the Western that had a very memorable score for each broadcast, Frontier Town. This is an hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now time for The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen with the story The Derelict and the Wandering Boy, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode from the 7th of January, 1948.
Entry, The Ketch Scarlet Queen, Philip Kearney, Master. Position, 9 degrees 13 minutes south, 146 degrees 30 minutes east. Wind fresh, sky fair. Remarks, departed Port Moresby, New Guinea after completion of salvage and rescue mission. Reason for mission, the derelict and the wandering boy. We were 50 miles off the Lewis Eight Archipelago, standing across the Coral Sea when we ran into the wall of rain. It blotted out the whole world. From the wheel, I could hardly see the Queen's bowsprit or the tops of her spars. And it continued. It brought squalls with it. The drops slanted across our decks and bit at us like insects. With nightfall, the visibility dropped to zero. We reefed sail, leaving aloft only enough canvas to give us headway. We inched forward blindly into complete screaming darkness. I was at the wheel and my chief mate Gallagher was below. He'd been at the radio sending out our position, speed, and course to any ships that might be in our vicinity. In an hour, he hadn't found any. It didn't take long to realize that things had changed when he came out of the cabin.
Well, I've got some great news.
Oh, yes, Skipper.
What's up, Red?
A distress call from the steamship Lawson. Captain Mark Reedy. And a great night.
Holy. What's her position, Red?
She's aground on a reef about 20 miles east of here in Mesima Straits. She's our baby, Skipper. There's not another ship within 12, 14 hours of her.
With visibility like this?
Yeah.
Okay, Red, we'd be a fine pair if we didn't take a crack at it.
Hey, Gordon!
Aye, sir.
Break out the watch. Stand by to trim sail. We're changing course.
Go on, plot us a course, Red. We'll see if we can find her.
And so Mutual continues The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen, written by Gil Dowd and Bob Tallman, and starring Elliot Lewis. The Scarlet Queen, proudest ship to plow the seas, bound for uncharted adventure. Every week a complete entry in the log, and every week a league further in The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen.
We maintained radio contact with the Lawson as we groped blindly toward her through the rain. We learned that she was a small thousand-tonner, carrying mixed cargo and 8 passengers. She was aground by the head, a hole torn in her forward plates by the sharp coral of the reef. We requested her to rig her brightest searchlight and to swing its beam in the direction of our approach. But a few hours later, when we picked our way carefully into Mesima Straits, it was her steam whistle that caught our attention. Its monotonous call reached out for us across the rain-swept water. Then we picked up the faint glow of a light. And 40 minutes later, we pulled alongside.
Hey, the Lawson! We'll put a heaving line aboard you!
We're ready for you!
Okay, Red, toss her aboard. Good, Red. Send one hawser aboard, Red.
We'll keep a strain and stay off the reef with the engine.
All right, Nielsen, that stop with bow line will do. Pull the six panorama just
there. And Rogers! Yeah!
Send a couple of men to give me a hand at the ladder. I'm coming aboard.
Our call, Captain. We're in a bad way.
I can believe it. She sounds like she's ripping her belly out on the reef. Are you the first officer?
That's right, sir. Tom Grist.
Where's Captain Reedy?
Oh, up in the chart room, most likely. Three sheets to the wind, the way he was when he piled us up on his coral. If he doesn't lose his papers over this one, I'll be shark bait.
Yeah. I better pay him my respects, don't you think?
Well, the ladder to the bridge deck is right through that passageway. I'd better stay on deck.
Okay, Chief. See you later.
As I stepped through the passageway, the sounds of rain and water lowered, and the groan of the ship's bottom tearing itself on the reef seemed louder. I swung up the ladder leading to the bridge deck, past half a dozen frightened passengers huddled in the ratty little dining saloon below me. I found the chart room door just forward of the top of the ladder.
You be?
Captain Philip Carney, the Catch Scarlet Queen.
And what might you be doing forcing entry into my ship's chart room?
We picked up your distress call, Captain. We're standing by to...
Distress call? Why, that mutinous devil, he took it on himself, did he? He'll be up before the shipping board for this. Mr. Grierson! Mr. Grierson, report to the chart room! He won't even answer me, you mutinous fool. Captain Mark Reedy never sent out a distress call in 40 years at sea. Cast off your ship, Captain. Leave me alone.
You better drink some coffee and get yourself back on an even keel. You got a ship breaking up on the...
It's my ship.
You can have her, Reedy. She won't live through a change of tide. Rising water will lift her free so she'll sink from that hole in her bow. And she'll capsize if the water falls with her head jammed on the reef the way it is. Take your choice.
Would you... join me in a drink, Captain?
No, thanks. I'm going down and start transferring your passengers to my ship and as much of your valuable cargo as I can handle.
Oh, wait a minute, Captain.
Yeah?
This is my ship. I don't know what you think of me.
I don't mind telling you. I think your line should have retired you 10 years ago. I don't think you're fit for a command.
Sit down, son. I want to ask you one question.
Make it short.
How long have you been sailing these waters, son?
Long enough to stay afloat, Captain Reedy.
I've been navigating this run from the Solomons and Lewis Aids to Port Moresby since I was as young as you.
Yeah, yeah.
Drunk and sober through calm and gale.
Yeah, well, you only have to miss once, you know.
Just let me finish, son. I come into Messina Strait tonight the same way as I come in 100 or 200 nights before, standing the wheel myself. Now, you don't do it by chance, son. Not when you make it as many times as I have.
Come on, get to the point, Captain.
Well, there's a lighted channel, boy. As long as you keep it well on your starboard, you miss this cluster of reefs. That's why it's there.
Why are you giving me this story, Captain?
Because the channel boy was on my starboard, son. Well on my starboard, like it's meant to be.
Huh?
As sure as I'm sitting here, son. Carney.
Bill
Carney. My case will look better in Admiralty Court if I can prove I went aground due to accident instead of carelessness.
Yeah, I know. You think the channel boy broke loose?
That's what I think. I know it was well on my starboard where it belongs when I went aground. It'll not take you long to have a look, Captain. The boy is still there on the starboard.
Yeah, it won't take long for this tub to capsize or sink.
It'll take my command, Captain. I'll pay you for your trouble if that's what you want. I've been a seafaring man all my life, son. I know nothing else.
All right, Captain Reedy, I'll start putting your passengers aboard my ship, then I'll go take a look. You better start getting your gear ready, too, if you want to keep a deck under you.
If you find the boy out of position, I'll leave with you, Carney. If you don't, I think I'd rather stay with my ship.
You're old-fashioned, Captain. We'll talk about it later. You could feel the gentle jarring of the ship grinding on the reef now. It seemed as though the fore and aft angle was becoming steeper as the tide dropped from beneath the stern. When it went far enough, I knew the ship would tear loose from the coral and settle on its port side. Two of the passengers waited for me at the bottom of the ladder, a man paunchy and badly used by the tropics, and a younger woman with a calm, almost indolent expression in her dark eyes.
man's expression and attitude were different.
Captain Carney, I'm Frederick J. Wade, the Owen Stanley Gold Mines Limited. This is my wife.
Hello, Captain.
Yeah, how do you do?
Captain, wait. I must have a word with you.
Make it short, Mr. Wade. I'm going to start putting you passengers aboard my ship.
The very question that was in my mind, Captain. But it so happens that I'm traveling with a fabulous cargo.
He doesn't mean me, Captain.
Well, that's a little surprising, Mr.
Don't
Wade.
Don't interrupt, Freedom. It so happens, Captain, that my company placed me in charge of the transport of over 3,000 ounces of gold from our mines on the island of Blood S to Port Moresby. We had the misfortune of being forced to use this miserable button. So I must
ask you...
You
must ask me to save it for you.
Yes, you will be amply repaid for its safe delivery.
I'll do what I can.
What you can, sir. Good heavens, it must be saved.
Look, I got 8 passengers and probably 20 crewmen to put aboard my ship, Wade. If there's time and room after they're taken care of, we'll load your gold.
Oh, well, then by all means, Captain, let us proceed with all the speed we can muster. I'll go to my cabin and prepare myself for the transfer.
He takes good care of me, doesn't he?
Well, don't worry, Mrs. Wade. You're surrounded by men to take care of you.
That sounds interesting. But I'm not worried. Our condition isn't as serious as you led my husband to believe, is it? Tom said we didn't have anything to worry about.
Tom?
Yes.
You mean Grierson, the chief officer?
Uh-huh. Tom to his friends.
Yeah. Well, I hope Tom's right. But in case he isn't, I think you better get your stuff ready, too.
It would be quite a feather in your cap to salvage as much gold as we have aboard, wouldn't it, Captain? To say nothing of the money it would put in your pocket.
You think I'm scaring you off this hulk just so I can earn a salvage fee? You better find a life jacket. We'll pick you out of the water when you find out I'm not kidding. The rain had lightened by the time I got out on deck. The clouds above were beginning to thin and silver some from the moonlight above them. Grierson stood by the ladder waiting for me.
Well, did you get him sobered up, Captain?
Yeah, Grierson. He was making headway when I left. I want you to start putting your passengers aboard the Queen. I'll be back before you finish with him.
Where are you going?
My chief mate and I are going to take our small boat and row up and take a look at that channel light.
What the devil are you going to do that for?
Well, maybe your skipper wasn't as drunk as you thought he was. He seems to think that boy broke loose and is out of position.
He's crazy. And you must be two to go along with that. He was just drunk, that's all.
It won't take long to find out, Grierson. If it's true the boy broke loose, he won't lose his master's ticket. So at his age, I guess he deserves somebody looking into it, huh?
It's your time, Connie. Go ahead and waste it.
Thanks. I'd like to see an officer support his captain the way you do. Go on, get started with the passengers.
Gallagher! Here, skipper! Get Nielsen set to receive passengers! You put the small boat over the side! We're going for a short trip!
In 20 minutes, Red and I had pulled 100 or so yards to the lighted channel buoy. Picking our way through the reef points by the phosphorescence swirling in the currents around them. We shipped our oars. Red held us steady at the light while I threw a painter around it. Made us fast.
Yeah. It broke loose, all right. If you kept this on your starboard,
you would... Look, Red. I want to raise this cable if I can.
Yeah, coming up.
Yeah, thanks. Red.
What do you got, Skipper?
That drunken captain didn't know how right he was.
Why, what do you got?
It didn't break loose, Red. Somebody moved this boy. The metal cable usually used to anchor buoys had been cut, and a heavy manila line bent on in its place. That meant that the Lawson had been deliberately sent aground. And with $100,000 worth of gold aboard her, it wasn't hard to figure why.
I checked on the boat.
Oh, Grierson, I'm glad you're here, too.
I'm trying to get the old man out of here.
Well, it's all right for you to go, Captain Reedy. The light had been moved, all right.
It what?
I told you, son. I told you something was wrong.
How do you know it was moved, Connie?
The boy had been cut loose from its cable and re-anchored in its new position with a heavy piece of manila line.
Oh, hold back, son. You mean it was done on purpose?
Yeah. And if you weren't drowned in that liquor, you'd know why. It was done by someone who knew you had that gold aboard and knew where you were taking it. Who'd know all that?
The devil, son.
You would, Captain. You would, Grierson.
What are you talking about?
Frederick J. Wade Woods owed his wife, Frieda. How about it, Grierson?
Are you accusing me, Connie?
I'm asking you. Why did you tell Frieda that you had nothing to worry about?
Boy, I just didn't
want to... Were you expecting another ship and another crew to board you?
I just told her that so she wouldn't worry and go out of pieces.
Maybe you and she are working together.
Now, wait a minute,
Grierson.
Connie.
This is hard to believe.
You're making wild guesses. Why suspect me? Why not the old man here?
He's the one who sent me to check the boy, remember? Oh, never mind. Wade has offered to pay me for salvaging that gold. I'm taking him up on it. I suppose I'll see both of you later.
Captain Connie, are we in danger?
Wade!
I saw you rush up to the bridge deck. I've been waiting for you.
Yeah. Thought you'd be aboard the Queen with the rest of the passengers.
Oh, Frieda and I stayed here. I wanted to be sure you'd move my gold aboard your ship. And Frieda, I suppose, wanted to be near that scoundrel Grierson. Well, that's her affair, not mine.
Where is Frieda, Wade?
Heaven knows. With him, I suppose. Why?
Wade, this ship being aground is no accident.
There's no accident? Well, who did it?
Somebody aboard was in on it. I figured that another ship's supposed to arrive to take your gold off.
Good heavens. Oh, but surely...
You said yourself she was paired off with Grierson. It would be a good enough haul for anybody.
Oh, no, no. Oh, but, Captain, you are going to salvage my gold.
Well, like I told you, I'll do what I can. Look, you can help.
Oh, anything you say, Captain, and I can assure you, you'll be generously rewarded by my company upon the successful completion of the operation.
All right, Wade, where is your gold?
Locked in two strong boxes in the purser's office, to all of which I have the key.
Give me the one in the office. Then get aboard the Queen and tell Mr. Gallagher to douse all lights and get ready to receive your boxes. I'll get some steam into these winches and send them down to you.
As you say, Captain, right away.
I watched his portly figure disappear through the passageway. Then I started to work. If there was another ship in on the deal, I figured that the bad visibility had slowed her up. Sky was clearing now. I decided to give them as little help in finding us as I could. I found the master light panel. I killed all the deck lights first. Then I started on the main house. Just as I was reaching for the switches to darken the saloon, I heard a step scuff the deck behind me. I pulled the switches, threw myself prone before I even looked. First shot screamed off the bulkhead just above me. When the flash died, I rolled into a new position. Second one missed me by a more comfortable margin. Then I heard steps fading aft down the companionway. I got to my feet, made what speed I could through the pitch darkness after them. I heard a door slam just ahead of me into my right. I groped for it. Found it. Went in.
Tom!
Drop the gun, Frieda.
Who is it? I can't see.
Drop the gun.
I haven't got a gun.
What?
I haven't got a gun. I didn't have one. Oh, it's you, Captain Connie.
Yeah, who threw the shot?
I don't know. How should I know?
Why don't you drop the axe, Frieda? Is your boy Grierson gunning for me?
Tom, why should he?
Maybe because I'm taking the gold off and messing up his chances of you two doing a fast disappearing act with it.
Captain Connie, what are you saying?
Oh, look, you aren't kidding anybody, especially your husband.
I never tried to kid anybody. Frederick knew I was going to divorce him and marry Tom. But the gold...
Somebody arranged things so that this ship would go aground. The best motive is the gold.
Oh, no, he couldn't have.
Then what?
He was so determined to get a ship command, and he hated Captain Reedy. But he wouldn't have done this to get one.
Look, if you don't want to slide off into 30 fathoms when this hulk lets go of that reef, you better get over the side onto the Queen.
Not without Tom. Where is he?
I'd feel safer if I knew, gorgeous, but I don't. Come on.
No,
get out on the deck.
Let go of me. Let go of me.
I ought to, but I took on a rescue job and you're part
of it. Tom, I won't go.
You won't have to, Frieda.
Tom, darling, where are you?
Don't try to find me, honey. Step away from me and get away from Connie. I don't want to hit you.
All right, darling.
It's time you and I settled this, Connie.
It's not too much time. This hulk is slipping.
I heard what you told Frieda, and I've taken enough of your meddling. As far as I can see, you haven't got anything on anybody aboard this ship. I'm stealing a man's wife, but that's no crime in any law.
You're so clean, why don't you save your story for the lawyers, Grierson?
Because I want you squared away before I leave here. I'm not going on the block for this wreck. You keep forgetting that I'm the guy who ordered that distress message sent out. The lawyers are going to like that, aren't they?
It's a good thing you did. Maybe with that bad visibility, the other ship couldn't find you. Wait a minute, Grierson.
Don't try anything, Connie. I warn you. If you do, this gun goes off.
Wait a minute.
Hey, skipper, where are you?
Don't answer, Connie.
I didn't have to. I saw the beam from a powerful flash streak into the dark companionway. I kept my back to it. When I saw it hit Grierson's face, saw his eyes wince from the sudden light, I moved in on him.
Give me the gun. Take
Hey, Skipper, this clunk of rust is...
Come here, Red. Get a hold of this guy, will you?
Oh, what the devil's going on?
Keep Grierson off of me. I got to talk to him. Now, calm down, Grierson. You and I both have been suckered in this deal. It was a good case against you. I don't blame you for blowing your top, but you can quit worrying. You're as clear as deep water.
You're just over-suspicious, Connie. I told you didn't have anything on anybody on this ship. If somebody reckoned to get that gold, they're from someplace else. The visibility just kept them from getting
That's
here.
That's where you're wrong, Grierson. There is somebody on this ship. And if he'd been a little soberer, he'd have found me with one of those slugs back in the saloon.
The old man?
Yeah, Captain Reedy. He wanted the ship to go aground so he could split that gold with somebody. With the boy moved, he wouldn't be blamed for it.
You got barnacles on the brain, Skipper.
Reedy was the guy that sent us out to check on the position of that boy.
Yeah, and that's where he made his mistake. He gave me that story about taking a sight on that boy. He was still trying to lift the blame from himself, but listen. With the zero visibility in that rainstorm, he couldn't have even seen that light. Much less kept it on his starboard. Well, what are you waiting for? You haven't got much time. Come on, Gallagher. Get those two aboard the Queen. I'll go take care of the gold. We slung the two strong boxes over the side and onto the decks of the Scarlet Queen with as much speed as we could get out of the rusty winches and the dying steam. The tide was still dropping. And the decks of the Lawson were beginning to angle to port as well as steeply down by the stern. I headed for the chart room for the last time.
Get away from that door.
Come on, open up, Reedy. Time to go.
I said get away from that door.
Come on, you rumhead. Look, what's a prison term to a worn-out old sea dog like you? They'll feed you better than you ate on this scow.
Get away! Get away! The other ship will come for me.
They'll never make it, Reedy.
They were here yesterday.
Come on, Reedy. I'll give you a hand.
Get away or I'll string you again.
She's going, Reedy. Look, I haven't got time to argue. I'll ask you once more. Come on, sweat it out for a few years.
Get away!
Okay, you old pirate.
Get off of my ship! I'll sail into Port Moresby myself, you deserting rat!
Red and I stood on the deck of the Queen, 50 yards off the reef, and watched. The tide had dropped so far that only the after half of the Lawson was in the water. The swells lifted it, twisted it, and dropped it, a little lower each time. Finally, it couldn't hang on the reef any longer. It twisted a little more to port, enough to let the water rush into its after holds. The moon broke through the clouds for an instant. I saw the figure of Captain Reedy on the bridge deck, from where he'd commanded his ship for so many years. He stood there, pushing his weight against the list of his ship, looking out over the bow. Thirty seconds later, the Lawson was out of sight. There's nothing I like about a guy who'd murder his own ship. I don't know what made me hate to see him go that way.
That crazy old sea dog.
I did everything I could to get him off, Fred.
Sure you did, Skipper. Come on, we better get some cloth up and get out of here.
Hmm? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess I've seen enough of this reef. The morning broke fair and brisk, and that afternoon we found our berth at Port Moresby. We put off our passengers in Frederick Wade's gold. The generous payment we received wasn't quite as generous as his buildup had been, but split among the crew, it was enough for everyone to send a few trinkets back to the States. 2 days after that, we discharged our cargo and taken on another, coffee and rubber for the warehouses of Darwin. We stood out of the harbor under power, found the wind, put our figurehead onto a course up through Torres Strait and Arafura Sea.
And
the crew, eager for an Australian port where girls on the street spoke their language and the girls in the bars spoke the same, jumped to their stations with a will. The throat and peak halyard heaved the big mainsail into its working position. The jib went up. And the mizzen. And we trimmed them for a close reach under the steady breeze.
Well, I guess we'll get there with this rig, huh, Skipper?
Yeah, I think we might.
If nobody moves a channel boy on us.
Well, not having anything more valuable in our holds than a few thousand pounds of raw coffee and raw rubber, I guess there's no danger of that.
Or passengers, Red. Passengers will cause trouble when a cargo won't.
Yeah. That Dame Frieda, for example.
Oh, yeah. If she'd had a different type husband, the fur would have been flying.
I don't know. With a wife like that, why should he be so interested in gold?
Search me. But that Grierson brought up an interesting point.
Huh?
Stealing a man's gold is a crime, but stealing his wife isn't. How do you like that?
Let somebody else worry about it. The saints be praised, we aren't bothered by either.
I don't know. We aren't exactly unattached.
No, but she'll never leave with another first mate while I'm alive. To the Queen, Skipper?
To the Scarlet Queen. After you, mate. After you.
Log entry. The Ketch Scarlet Queen. 5:30 p.m. Wind fresh, sky fair. Sea calm with long cross swell. Ship secure tonight. Signed, Philip Carney, Master.
The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen, untuned to yesterday from January 7th, 1948 on Mutual Radio. Wrapping up this hour of adventure, untuned to yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.